Every now and then, I fall apart. By Sign Allah. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Contrary to popular belief, Tony doesn't actually hate magic itself. Some of his best friends are magicians, after all. It's just that when he tangles with magic-wielding villains, it tends not to go well. Sometimes Dr. Doom sends him to Camelot. Sometimes Morgan Le Fay sends the Avengers, well, also to Camelot. And while losing a fight to Dr. Doom or Morgan Le Fay, or hell, even Loki, would be understandable, Tony refuses to let this be the day that some no-name two-bit villain who stole one of Strange's grimoires smears the Avengers' faces in the dirt. And yet that's exactly what's happening today. They've been chasing this guy over the roofs of warehouses on Long Island for 20 minutes when he shouts out spells with stupid alliterative names, and that's when Tony dodges the wrong way straight into a bright pink bolt of energy and fully expects to wake up, if not in Camelot, at least in the parking lot of the nearest Medieval Times. Instead, the HUD goes black. Pain sears through him, stabbing straight into his artificial heart as he gasps for breath. He knows he's falling, and the suit's not working, and he can't. Oh, God, his heart. An eternity of seconds later, the boot jets click on, and his heart's beating once more, just barely. He's dripping sweat inside the suit, clammy and awful, still in agony, and he knows that was too close. Iron Man? Steve is shouting over the team comms. There's that particular frantic urgency to his voice that means he's called Tony's name more than once. Then there's a click as he switches to private comms. Tony, are you okay? Tony opens his mouth, fully intended to say, perfectly fine. He can fly. He can fight. The team needs him. I'm scared, Tony hears himself say. I'm really scared. I'm in a lot of pain. My heart gave out again, and I'm worried I might be dying. What the hell? Okay, it's not like it's not true, but it's also not like he'd ever admit that to anyone. His face heats with shame. He's supposed to be better than this. He's not supposed to just go around saying things like this. Oh. Tony? Steve asks, managing to combine incredulous and extremely concerned into two syllables, because even Steve knows this isn't right. Okay, hang in there. Just keep breathing, all right? We can get you medical help right away. Let me... It's a truth spell, Tony concludes. There's a pause. Steve's trying to decide what to do with him. He can see Steve on the rooftop below, squinting up at him. Steve knows now. He knows it's not an emergency. He knows this must be normal. God, what's Steve thinking about him right now? Right. Fall back, shellhead, Steve says finally. I don't want you mixed up in this. Not in this condition. It's not like he's helpless. It's not like this is anything different than usual. I can fight, Tony insists, which must be a true statement, because he can say it just fine. Come on, I'm an Avenger. I know, Steve says. He sounds gentle. I know you can fight, but you're compromised. You need to be checked out. The rest of us can handle this just fine, okay? Great. Steve pities him. Just what he needed. Roger that, Tony says, hoping he doesn't sound too sullen. He falls back from the battlefield as Carol zaps their villain dead on with a photon blast. Jen plucks the grimoire from the guy's hands. Looks like they didn't really need Tony after all. He's under some kind of truce spell, and Steve, his hero and best friend, Captain Goddamn America, thinks he's weak just because he's in a bit of pain. Awesome. This day can't get any worse, Tony thinks. It gets worse. Instead of having the post-fight debriefing in the usual room, for God's sake, Tony built them a briefing room. Steve insists on marching everyone down to the infirmary so that Tony can sit, shirtless and scarred, on the edge of one of the beds, while the whole team stares at him like he's a lab specimen. Tony hooks his artificial heart up to the nearest battery readouts to make sure it's still okay. Wanda puts her glowing hands on either side of his head. She's performing her own kind of scan. Like, this isn't embarrassing enough. He's supposed to be Iron Man. Brave, strong, unafraid. They all know he's flawed now. Every time he opens his mouth, he reveals another terrible piece of himself. He used to be vain. He hates that they can all see the charging port in his chest. Luckily, he doesn't seem to be compelled to share his random thoughts aloud. It's definitely a truce spell, Wanda says. Give me a few more minutes, Captain, and I should be able to tell you more about what kind it is. Steve glances worriedly up at the monitors, which are staying steady. Only a truce spell? But it hurt him. My heart's functioning fine now, Tony tells Steve, glaring. Steve's been pacing the room for the past 10 minutes. Cowl pulled back, a fretful line scrunched between his eyebrows. It's ridiculous because Tony is fine. You told me you were scared. You told me you were in a lot of pain, Steve says, quoting Tony, with his unfortunately perfect memory, to the entire goddamn team. Great, now everyone knows. You told me you were worried you were going to die. You can't see why I might be concerned about you? Trying to pretend he doesn't care, wondering if he can lie wordlessly, Tony shrugs. I see why, he's forced to admit. Because obviously Steve wants the team in fighting condition. But so what? If I stopped fighting when it hurt, I'd never be an Avenger. He feels weirdly triumphant that the spell lets him say this. Steve's mouth is half open in surprise. You mean to tell me it hurts that much all the time? Of course not, is what Tony wants to say. This is not what Tony says. Well, yeah, Tony says, hating every word of perfect truth that comes out of his mouth. A lot of the time, that's how it is. It always hurts. Fighting hurts. Charging my heart really hurts. I'm usually in a lot of pain. One thought, of course, inevitably leads to the next, the thought that's always there in the back of his mind. God, I wish I had a drink. I always wish I had a drink. He snaps his mouth shut as Carol goes noticeably paler. Oh, God, she's only been sober for, what, 6 months? And here he is, her sponsor, setting a terrible example. I'm sorry, Carol, he says hurriedly. I didn't mean to. I know you didn't, Carol says. But she still looks shaken, and Tony knows he's ruining everything. It's okay, she says, though it obviously isn't. And she gets to lie. Tony is jealous. He wants to apologize more, but he also very much does not want to open his mouth again ever. A blessed reprieve. Wanda drops her hands and steps back. Maybe she can fix this already? But she's shaking her head, and the most Tony can do is hope that none of his disappointment shows on his face. I'll have to examine the grimoire more closely, I'm afraid, Wanda says. Now that we have it, that should make reversal easier, but would help if I could get some idea of the parameters of the spell. Steve frowns. Parameters? Wanda nods and turns to Tony. For example, whether it compels you to answer a question with the truth, or whether you can lie at all, or whether you can remain silent. She purses her lips. First, try not to answer me. What's your favorite song to sing along to when you don't think anyone's listening? Words push their way to the forefront of Tony's mind, but he keeps his mouth resolutely shut. Good. He doesn't have to say anything. If he doesn't speak, he doesn't have to speak the truth. All right, Wanda says. Same question, but now try to lie to me. He knows what song Tony Stark, the arrogant, egotistical superhero, is supposed to pick. Well, obviously, he begins, it's Black Sabbath's Iron... Damn it, total eclipse of the heart. There are muffled giggles from somewhere behind him. Probably Scott. Awesome. Now all of his teammates probably think he's a joke. Soft. Sentimental. I like the chorus, Tony mumbles. His face is hot. His heart rate has probably gone up. He needs to stop talking. There's a pause. Thanks, Wanda says. She sounds a little awkward. That will help. I'll try to have an answer as soon as I can. Sorry to have to put you through this. She can't be that sorry. None of them could be that sorry. They wouldn't all be here crowding around him, seeing him unmasked now in truth. When Tony looks up, Steve's eyes are still a little wider than normal. But you're really in that much pain all the time. You never said anything. It doesn't occur to Tony that he's free to not answer until he's already opened his mouth, at which point he's doomed himself. Why would I say anything? He asks. If Steve were kinder, he would never have asked. And yet Steve's face contorts into misery at the answer. I'm Iron Man. The team needs me to get the job done. That's what I'm here for. No one needs to know how I feel. It's unnecessary. Steve's face falls, distraught, but then reforms into a familiar determination, his stare pinning Tony where he sits. Oh, Steve retorts. What would you say if one of your fellow Avengers came to you and told you what you just told me? He pauses. He lifts his chin in the way that always means he's going to hit with his hardest rhetorical point. What if I told you that I was scared and hurting all the time, Tony? What would you tell me? The instant, obvious answer rises up in Tony's mouth that he knows. He knows with everything in him that he can't say it. All his other secrets pale in comparison to this one. I'd tell you I loved you, he wants to say. I'd tell you I'd do anything in my power to make you better because I love you more than anyone else in the world. I've been in love with you for years. I'd never want you to be in as much pain or fear as I am, not ever, because I love you so much. He can't say that. He can't. If he opens his mouth, those are the words that will come out of it. He's sitting here, scarred and broken, surrounded by the entire damn team, and they'd all watch Steve turn him down. They'd watch Steve turn away, astonished, appalled, horrified. He has to get out of here. He unhooks the electrodes, reaches for his shirt, and doesn't even bother putting it back on until he gets to the doorway. He'd very much like to say, I'm going to the workshop, and will everyone please leave me alone? But the compulsion to answer Steve is still running through him like live current. He can't say anything without ruining it all. He just turns and goes. Luckily for Tony, somewhere in the long walk between the infirmary and his workshop, the feeling begins to die down. He can still feel the true spell on him. The hair on the back of his neck raised all at once, a never-ending ripple of goosebumps. But he knows he's safe from letting his feelings about Steve slip, at least for the moment. The words aren't crowding his mouth, jostling his teeth and tongue and palate in a demand to be heard. He wonders if the spell has a range or a time limit. He hopes fervently that it's not just range because he already knows he's not getting out of this one easy. He wonders how long he has until Steve comes after him, until he gives up all his secrets. The workshop is blessedly empty and Tony collapses into a chair, reveling in the fact that for at least a few minutes, no one is going to want to talk to him, to make him force out any more of his soul. He didn't tell anyone where he was going, of course, but Steve knows. Steve always knows. Steve knows almost everything about him. Steve just needs to not know this. It turns out that Steve leaves him about 10 minutes, a respectable amount of time to pace a room, to stop and try some deep breathing, to pour himself a cup of coffee that now everyone knows he wishes were something a little, a lot stronger. At least he doesn't need to charge his heart right now. The knock, when it comes, is quiet, almost meek. Tony? Steve asks, may I come in? Yes, Tony says, because despite everything, he wants Steve at his side. He always wants Steve at his side. He's grateful this true spell lets him get away with just saying yes. Sheepish is an odd and uncomfortable look on Steve. His shoulders are hunched, and he glances around the workshop, focusing on the tools as if Tony's CNC machine is the most exciting thing he's ever seen. He doesn't look at Tony's face. Tony half wonders why Steve even bothered to show up. Then Steve raises his head. "I just wanted to say, I was sorry," Steve says. His mouth works. "I didn't mean to lay into you like that back there. I was just..." He stops and shakes his head. "Sorry. I'm trying not to ask you direct questions. I know I spooked you, and I'm still not sure why." And now the truce spell, half-interested, buzzes and then subsides when Steve doesn't make a real question of it. "But I figured I owed you an apology, Shellhead. I never meant to pry." Tony stands there waiting. He doesn't know what's safe to say. He's not sure what will come out of his mouth if he does. Steve looks over at the couch in the corner. "May I sit down?" Another answerable question, thank God. "Yes, of course," Tony says, and he cuts himself off before he says anything else. Steve levers himself down onto the couch. Before Tony can really think about what he's doing, he finds himself taking the other end. It's instinct, but it's leading him wrong. Being closer to Steve is just going to compound the problem. Steve sighs a long, drawn-out shudder of a sound and taps his fingers on the arm of the couch. "I don't know how to say any of this without making it worse. I can't claim to understand what it feels like to be you. I know that. But I can at least tell you what went through my mind when I heard you say that." Tony would very much like to say something comforting, but he doesn't dare open his mouth. "I have the serum now," Steve begins. "And the healing factor means that even if I'm in pain, I'm not in pain for long. But I didn't always have the serum." He pauses, looks into the distance. "I was sick a lot as a kid. I ended up in a lot of fights. And between those two things, I don't think I ever stopped hurting. Broke so many bones, I probably should have won some kind of medal. One year I got pneumonia, and I was so sick the priest came to give me last rites. So when you said you were in pain, I thought about how I used to feel all the time, and I imagined you feeling like that." His mouth quirks. "I didn't much like the thought of that." Tony sucks in a breath. He has no idea what to say. But Steve's not done. "And last year, when I lost the serum, when I was dying, you were right there at my side, helping me out the instant I needed it, making me that suit so I could still breathe and move. And it meant a lot to me that you helped me when I needed it. Wasn't exactly painless then for me, you know." Steve licks his lips. I just don't understand why it upsets you that I care about you, Tony." This is it. This is where Tony is going to ruin the rest of his life and one of the best friendships he's ever had if he opens his mouth. And the worst part is that right now he's miserable enough to do it. Steve cares about him. Steve cares about him, and it hurts. Hurts like his goddamn heart hurts. Because that's all it is, caring. Steve's a good friend. A good friend who definitely doesn't need to know that Tony is in love with him. Tony looks back at him. "You don't want to know," he says, pleading. And he's grateful that prevarication seems to be an option. The spell lets him say it. Surely this is further confirmation that Tony is right about Steve's feelings or lack thereof. "Trust me. You really don't want to know the answer to that." He almost wants to taunt Steve. "Make me say it. Get it over with. Then you'll know. Then you can leave for good." There's a long silence between them. Tony wishes he hadn't left his cup of coffee halfway across the room. Tony wishes he had a double of scotch. Steve looks at him, considering. His face doesn't change. He's still achingly kind and confused all at once. Tony wonders what he sees. Then Steve makes a soft, quiet noise of realization. The sort of sound he makes in the middle of sketching out battlefield tactics. "Oh," Steve says, "I understand now." "No, you don't," Tony thinks, sad and vicious and terrified. "You think," Steve says very softly, "that I don't know that you love me." Tony isn't quite sure what happens then. If there's a feeling of having another goddamn heart attack combined with the way he first saw his own death inside himself 10 years ago and half a world away, when he looked down and saw the shrapnel spattered across his chest in a spray of gore and shining metal and thought, "So this is what's going to kill me." Well, then that's pretty much how he's feeling now, the unadulterated terror of his impending doom. He could hear blood pounding in his ears, his breath hissing as he pants like a wounded animal, his artificial heart going like a trip hammer. Steve knows, Steve knows, Steve knows. And he can't see, he can't think, he can't feel. And then he feels something. Warmth. Steve's taken his gloves off and he's holding Tony's ice-cold hand between both of his. "It's okay," Steve says. And his voice is so gentle because obviously he's just so understanding when it comes to Tony's helpless, hopeless crush. And Tony shuts his eyes in misery. "Shh. It's all right. Everything's all right. I promise." "But you know." Tony chokes out. And he can feel the hot tears starting to build even with his eyes screwed shut. "You know. You already knew. Oh, God." He can feel himself start to shake, his fingers trembling in Steve's strong hands. Why is Steve touching him? Why is Steve still here? This doesn't make any sense. He should be long gone. He thinks he's imagining the sensation at first, but then he feels it again. Steve is stroking his hand ever so lightly with his fingertips. It's tender. It makes Tony want to cry even more. Because this is everything he's ever wanted. And he can't have it. "Tony?" Steve asks, still soft. "Can you look at me, Tony?" It's not a question that requires a verbal answer, but damn him. He's never been able to resist Steve. When he opens his eyes, he sees Steve's a whole lot closer to him on the couch, practically pressed next to him. Steve's eyes are winter pale, like frost over ice, wide with concern. "Hey, there you go," he says, a hint of encouragement brightening his voice. "You want to take a few good breaths while you're at it? Nice and easy?" The star on his chest rises and falls as he exaggerates the motion for Tony to emulate. Hell, it's not like this can get any worse. After maybe 10 seconds of deep breathing, Tony starts to be able to feel his face again. "I'm sorry," Steve says. And his shoulders hunch again. He's gone back to being sheepish. "Shouldn't have sprung that on you, I guess. Sometimes I don't think before I speak. Don't think before I do. A whole lot of things, really. It's a bad habit." He sighs as he says it, like he's angry at himself. He's still holding Tony's hand, and as one, they look down at their joined hands. Steve still hasn't moved away. Tony has no clue what's going on here.
"You knew,"
Tony rasps.
"And if you knew, I don't understand why."
"Why I never said anything?" Steve's sigh now is rueful.
"I was scared, I guess. Back when I'd just woken up, when everyone was showing me the wonders of the future, the moon landing and the polio vaccine and all the social progress, none of you said anything about how it was better now to be queer. I had to figure out for myself that maybe it wasn't.
had to see all the signs about how AIDS was God's judgment, how men like me were the worst of all. So I made a choice. I wasn't going to tell anyone. I didn't want the world to hate Captain America because of something Steve Rogers was. And I looked at you and I figured maybe you'd made the same choice. No one needs a truth spell to get Captain America to tell the truth, do they? And he's right on the money about Tony, too. That, Steve says. And I couldn't stand the thought of ruining our friendship. I was still scared, I suppose, in a different way. That sounds like, wait, Tony says, confused and incredulous. Are you trying to tell me you actually like me? Steve blinks at him. Is there some reason I shouldn't? Tony pulls his hand away from Steve and runs it through his hair. Weirdly, Steve looks crestfallen, like he doesn't know. Isn't it obvious? Tony says. I'm not good enough. Not good enough? Steve echoes. And oh God, this is worse than Steve knowing he loves him, because now Steve is going to know exactly what kind of terrible human being he is. The truth slips out of Tony's mouth, is pressed past his lips with terrible force. It's all masks, Tony says, shuddering, shivering, now that Steve isn't touching him. Every inch of me that any other human being ever sees is a mask. There's the playboy hobnobbing on the red carpet. The guy who has to live in the world of the rich and famous, pretending that all he wants is a beautiful starlet on his arm. And there's Iron Man, but that's a mask too, literally. And there's the guy under the mask, your teammate, but he's not really me either. Something miserable wells up in Tony's chest. I pay people to be my friends. Have you noticed that? All my friends are my employees or Avengers, who are also my employees when you think about it. Nobody would ever want who I really am. And who's that? Steve asks gently. You saw once, Tony chokes out, and you turned away. I'm just a drunk. I'm always going to be a drunk. Deep down inside me, there's this awful aching sadness that nothing ever makes better, not even the drink. I'm just hollow and broken, and I don't need to tell you how much better you are than me. This is the real me. Steve licks his lips. What if I say, I still like the real you? I know you don't, Tony says desperately. There was that mess with the guardsmen. Then the Kree Supreme Intelligence. I'm a control freak. You even know about that. That's what I do, because I'm not drinking, probably. I'm not as good as you think I am. That's the truth. I can't lie. Steve can't possibly say yes, but he's reaching out, putting his hand on Tony's knee. Tony could feel the warmth of his touch even through the fabric of his pants. Maybe. The truth isn't what you think it is, Steve suggests. Because I think that deep down, you're more than you give yourself credit for. And I know you're hard on yourself, and I know we've had our share of disagreements, but you're amazing, Tony. I honestly believe that. Tony can feel his mouth twist. That's Steve, always trying to see the best in everyone. That's sweet of you, but I think I know who I am better than you do. He can feel the spell pressing on him. I look at myself every day in the mirror, and I hate the man who looks back. And I hate that I have to tell you this, that you have to know how weak I am, how soft I am, how if only I were stronger, a real man, not just play acting, a different face for every occasion. Lifting it away from Tony, Steve holds up his hand. It's not true.
It feels like Steve wants to shush him. He imagines Steve pressing his fingers to his lips and holding them there. I don't know who told you these things, who made you believe them, but you're the best man I know. He pauses then and seems to take another tack. I know how it feels to have to live up to something that you think is better than you, bigger than you, an ideal more perfect than any human could ever be. Some days I wake up and I wonder how a poor little kid from the Lower East Side ever got here, palling around with, well, billionaires and geniuses. I'm only human too, you know. Doesn't Steve get it? Yeah, Tony says, but you're... He feels like he really might cry. You're you, and I'm just... Hey, Steve says, his voice a little sharper but still gentle. Come here. What are you... This is all the warning he gets before Steve wraps him up in a huge hug. Despite Tony's brain telling him this is a terrible idea, his body betrays him, falling into Steve's embrace. Steve is huge and warm and smells comfortingly familiar, aftershave and leather. Tony buries his face against Steve's neck just above the sharp jut of his uniform scale mail, breathing him in. Steve has one hand on Tony's back and the other in Tony's hair, stroking his hair with the lightest of touches. His arm around Tony is strong. He's not letting go. They've known each other for 10 years. And Steve's never touched him like this before.
Easy, Steve whispers. Easy there. It's okay. If you need to cry, cry. Go ahead. It must have been hard holding all that inside you. I'm here. I'm not leaving.
Tony hears himself make a noise, a tiny, choked-out sob, and he knows he's crying now, dripping tears against Steve's neck.
I wish I didn't have to tell you the truth. I know that, too, Steve says softly.
Steve's hand slides through Tony's hair down to the nape of his neck, then up again. Steve's hand is on his cheek, and he tips Tony's head back to look at him. Tony imagines what Steve sees.
A mess of a man. I love you, Steve says, with that way he has, where he says something and makes it true, like it's simple. And I know who you are, true spell or not. If you want me, then you've got me. There's nothing to be afraid of. It's just me, and I love you.
Steve is too optimistic for his own good. You can't love me into liking myself any better. That's not how this works. You have to know that. Tony hears himself say, raw and bitter.
I know, Steve says, his voice still even. I know I can't. But I can be here if you need me, no matter how you feel about yourself. I know you're probably going to say you don't deserve me. But it's not about that. You can have this, us. We can have this. We can have more than this. Don't tell me you've never thought about that.
Steve's not doing anything that's not 100% innocent, but somehow, the way he touches Tony feels different. The hand on his back now is a caress. Steve rubs his other hand over Tony's neck again, his thumb sliding up the corded muscle on the side of his neck. He could pull Tony's mouth against his with just the smallest amount of pressure.
What if? A tiny, disloyal, hopeful part of Tony's brain starts to wonder. What if I could have something good and keep it?
Tony breathes out, shuddering. When Steve looks at him now, neither of them look away. Steve's right. He spent years thinking about this, but never like this, never when he's been stripped down to the core of himself, because even in his fantasies, he could never imagine Steve enduring him like this. He's imagined himself being suave, charming, the same Tony Stark everyone else gets.
That's not what Steve's getting. You don't want any of the masks, do you? Tony murmurs. Even the nice ones.
Steve's still rubbing his neck. I want you to be happy, Tony. And I like to think, maybe I could be someone who makes you happy. That can't be so wrong, can it?
It wouldn't be a miracle, Tony says, because even Steve has to know that's the truth.
I'm still me.
Not asking for a miracle, Steve returns evenly, like they can make a deal out of it. Just a little bit of happiness. Just someone to come home to. Someone to wake up next to in the morning.
I already come home to you, Tony blurts out.
Too much honesty again. Steve will find out.
No, wait, Steve already knows.
Steve's smiling. Well, then we're halfway there, aren't we?
Tony breathes out hard and lets himself lean into Steve. This time he wraps his arms around Steve tight.
Please, Tony says, and now the truth almost doesn't hurt. I want that. I want that so much. Please.
Steve hugs him right back and doesn't let go. For the first time in a long time, Tony thinks that maybe everything could be okay.
Annoyingly, Steve won't do more than hold him until they find a way to reverse the truth spell. He won't even kiss him, for God's sake.
Half an hour of cuddling later, at which point Tony is fully draped over Steve on his workshop couch, he's beginning to be frustrated with Steve's rock-solid morals.
I just don't want to do anything you'd regret when you're back to normal.
Tony raises his head. I have done so many things I regret, he says. He no longer has the energy to be ashamed of saying it or anything else. What the hell? The truth spell can have at him.
Steve strokes his hair. His gaze is distantly sad.
I know, shellhead, he says, but I don't want to be on that list.
You wouldn't be, Tony says with all his heart.
There, that has to be the truth because he said it.
Steve smiles. Humor me.
We've already waited this long.
We can wait for Wanda to crack the spell, can't we?
Not patiently, Tony grouses.
He feels bad about being forced to say that one, because apparently the true spell is determined to give everyone the worst possible version of him.
Steve just laughs, the sound resonating where Tony has laid his head on Steve's chest and ruffles his hair.
No, I know, Steve says, his smile fond. You never want to wait for anything.
As if on cue, there's a knock on the workshop door. Tony scrambles upright, stands, and sets himself to rights. Not that there's much to set, but he probably shouldn't still be cuddling Steve.
Come in, Tony says.
And there's Wanda, holding the grimoire open, joy radiating from her face.
I've got it.
Already? Steve asks.
Wanda nods. Yes, Captain.
Dispelling this one is quite simple, as it turns out, with the proper incantation. I can do it right now.
This last part is addressed to Tony. Will it hurt him? Steve asks.
And Tony could hear the obvious concern in his voice.
I mean, when the spell happened the first time, he said his heart gave out.
It shouldn't.
It doesn't matter if it hurts, Tony interjects, and okay, at least they all know the spell is still working.
Yes, it does, Steve and Wanda say at the exact same time. Steve says it with more vehemence.
Tony holds up his hands. Okay, fine. Give me a minute to get set up.
It takes 5 minutes, but finally he's in the chair in the corner, the cord to his heart plugged in, all the monitoring systems on.
Ready? Wanda asks.
Tony swallows hard.
I want Steve to hold my hand, he says.
And yeah, okay, the true spell is definitely working.
From the way Wanda's looking at them, she's clearly figured out the content of their recent conversation, especially when Steve steps up next to him and holds his hand tight.
Wanda smiles. Then the air in front of Tony's face goes red, the world dancing around him in circles of light and spinning glyphs. It doesn't hurt. Then the light fades away. All right, Wanda says, her voice brisk. Lie to me. Total Eclipse of the Heart is a terrible song, and I hate it, Tony says promptly, and then, oh, thank God, thank you so much. It was my pleasure, Wanda says. I'll see you for team dinner, or when the two of you, whenever you decide to grace us with your presence. Tony glances over at Steve, who is visibly blushing. Don't worry, Tony says. I'm sure we'll need to eat sometime. Wanda grins and hurries out of the workshop as Tony busies himself with pulling all the cords out of his chest. His shirt's already open. Convenient, that. You know, Steve says with a cheerful, reminiscent grin, it's not a bad song at all. Clint dragged me to a karaoke bar once and insisted on singing it. Steve, Tony can hear the pleading in his own voice. If you don't kiss me right now, I think I might literally die. Steve's smiling at him wide and pleased, and Tony can't even hate having waited the way Steve's looking at him. Then Steve climbs into his lap. The chair creaks under their weight, but holds. And oh God, Steve is here, right here, where he's supposed to be. Steve breathes. You're lying, sweetheart. That's when Steve kisses him. Deep, hard, and thorough. Like he's been saving it up for 10 years. Steve's lips are warm and soft, and yeah, this was definitely worth waiting for. I might have died, Tony counters. Good thing you kissed me. Steve just laughs and kisses him again. Happiness wells up inside him, washes over him in a wave. He has this. He has this to keep. The end.